Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and every Thursday we release these special episodes where we look back at content from our earlier years, sometimes single stories, sometimes whole episodes. Keep in mind that years ago, people might have worded things differently than they would today. As always, the title of the whole series, Risk, is itself a content warning. This week, the 35th episode of Risk that ever appeared in the world. It first went up in February of 2011. Now, I should say that Peaches Christ appears on this episode and talks about her legendary club in San Francisco that used to be called Tranny Shack. But several years after this story was recorded, Peaches changed the name of that club to Mother out of respect to the trans community. So without further ado, here from February of 2011 is the episode we call Son of Strange Sex.
You came.
Could you look at my ass? I just couldn't take it.
Hello, kids. This is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and oh my God, people, all of my equipment has malfunctioned on the very same night. I'm speaking to you from what might as well be a toy, a child's toy microphone. But the show must go on, because this is a goddamn good one, folks. This is Son of Strange Sex. You'll remember the very first Risk episode was called Strange Sex. Here we have, finally, before us, the sequel, the son, the offspring of Strange Sex. Jeff Barr did that crazy theme up top, and this is Sean Lee behind me. If you don't know the show, if this is your first time listening, you may not know that normally we have radio stories mixed in with the live stories, the stories told at the live shows. But this time around, we're going all live because we had such a great time in San Francisco last weekend that we've just got a ton of good stuff to lay out for you. First up, two friends of mine going way back, Randy and Jason Sklar. They have their own podcast, very popular. It's called Sklar Bro Country. Look for it on iTunes or anywhere. Here are the bros themselves with a story we call How Come You Don't Call Me Anymore?
We are going to tell like three or four little mini stories.
But it's because I've been married for 10 years. You know, I know a lot of people saying they don't have a lot of sex, like crazy sex stories. And I've known my wife for like three or four years before that. So I've been off the market for a while. I'm only 39. Like my wife and I, at one time we were like, let's kind of mess it up a little bit, spice it up, and watch a porno. And we put it in and we mistakenly got a porn that like had too much exposition,
yeah,
and all this other like character development and stuff. Like there was an exterior shot of a building. I'm like, why do you need to know where who's like watching two people fucking? They're like, where is this taking place? Is this on the south side of town?
What part of town?
You wouldn't fuck her like that if they were in the other side of the tracks. That doesn't make sense to me. I'm out of the moment.
Yeah.
I'm just out of it.
So that is such
a... I love my wife and we have great sex, but I mean, it was so... Anyway, I want to go back to it. It's something that... We'll let Jay tell a little story here because it's a damn good one.
Which one am I starting with?
So I'll preface this, is that I'll tell a story that relates to it. One time I was... My wife's parents live in Long Island.
Yes.
Part of the year in the summer times and then down in Florida the rest of the time, but we're in Long Island. They belong to a sort of a very waspy beach club. And we're there on the beach watching the fireworks of the 4th of July. And it was beautiful. And I'm there with, like, my daughter was, my oldest daughter was, I think, 2 at the time. And there were some other little kids around us. And there was, like, every year there's, like, new fireworks. And these people are very rich. So they, like, have their own boat that sends up their own fireworks. And they do, like, new different firework things that happen every year. And so there was this one that was just, like, this beautiful, I mean, beautiful, shimmering gold firework thing that came down. And we were all watching, and everyone was just like, ooh. And it was the first time it was introduced, and it was gorgeous. And everybody, like, all on their blankets on the beach watching this thing. And my mother-in-law looked up at it, and she was like, ooh, it's like a golden shower. I was like, not really like a golden shower, but yeah, maybe. Yeah. I guess people like that sort of thing.
Well, speaking of, I am married and I love my wife and she's amazing. But before I was married to her, there was a brief period where I was trying to be more experimental sexually a little bit. And I was in a relationship with a woman who, or hardly a relationship, we were dating very briefly, and she was in New York. And I was visiting her and I was like, let's try stuff. I want to try new things in my mind. I didn't really say this to her. I was like, come on, you, let's try these things.
Do it.
So, and then I was like, I will do that. So, so she was taking a shower and I'm like, I'm going to take a shower with her. So, by the way, I can't wait for my kid to download this someday.
Yeah, me too. What was dad?
Dad's on a comedy show. What? So I was like, I'm going to take a shower. And then at that moment, when I was in the shower, I was like, okay, the water's warm. I have to pee. Mm-hmm. Now, I could get out of the shower and pee in the toilet like a human being.
Right.
Or I could ratchet things up a notch.
And listen to yourself.
And see if she was into doing a little golden shower. Right. So I...
Release the new firework, so as it were.
This is how... Thank you.
Show the new model.
Yeah. So this is how much, like, me, who I am...
How you are not
and
the
maybe
person...
maybe a Jew should never give a golden
shower. Never. But how this is...
Because, first of all, like, I asked. I was like, how would you like to get a golden shower? You know, you don't ask someone if they want to get a golden shower. You're like, you're getting a fucking golden shower.
Yeah.
It's coming down and
whether you want it or not.
You can't. It's like Portland in here. Yeah. All right? You're getting it.
Get ready.
It's like, all right. So I asked and she was like, and I was like, well, I,
also not a great
yeah,
way to
not
get
a great
you.
Response. Yeah. I'm like, is that a yes? Cause it's coming. And, and then I didn't know where to put it on her.
Yeah.
Like, on her leg or on her stomach or on her back. And then
this is the moment at which
this is when I knew that I will never ever do this again, because she for some reason let me do it, and so I am peeing on another person, and then I heard these words come out of my mouth, which completely desexualized the entire thing. I was like, how's the pressure? Say
what a golden shower.
Also, because there's nothing I could do about the pressure. There's no way.
What if she said I want a little
I want
more?
It down on like 4. You're at like 6 right now.
Can you?
So
can you focus in on her? But back in the day, we were in New York. I went on a date with a girl, and we were walking down the. It's just a weird sexual thing, but we were walking down. And weird for not the reason you think that it's going to be weird, because it was a normal sexual act, but it's just, I'll explain it. So we were walking down the West Side Highway. This is before the...
Which is a great place to walk with someone on a date.
Yeah, down the highway somewhere. Walking down the
this
West...
This is before they had a nice park.
There was no nice park or trail. Now it's like all beautiful and totally developed down there, but it wasn't before. And then there were like long piers, which were beautiful to walk on. This is kind of near Chelsea, like that area of Manhattan, and we sort of... We walked out off onto like a pier, and it was a beautiful night. It was kind of cold, but it was a beautiful night. It was a first date that we had like had this hue, went out to dinner and walked all around through the West Village and then down the West Side, kind of down this way and then out on the pier. And it was beautiful. And as a young person in New York City, we grew up in St. Louis. And so I was just taking in the majesty Majesty?
No. You were taking in the magistrate.
I was taking in the majesty of the city that is opening up before me, and the lights, and it was beautiful, and I was just... I remember I actually, like, verbally took stock in it, and I was like, God, this is so beautiful. You look down here, there's, like, the Twin Towers, and they're beautiful, and you can see over there, there's the Empire State Building. There's two guys fucking. Then there's the Chrysler Building over there. Chrysler Building's right there. And literally, you're hearing, and it just was weird that, like, I was like, are we in a day and age where those guys could not have done it, like, in an apartment or even a hotel room or something right there? But, like, just we were saying, it was uncomfortable for everybody. I was like, did they not see me and this girl so close to them? And I could hear it literally.
Maybe they were excited about how close you were.
Maybe that was part of their sexual fantasy, but it just was a...
It kind of reminded us, when he told me that story about when we were kids, this was a weird little sexual thing when we were little kids. We, not that little, sixth grade, and we would all go ice skating in St. Louis. It was a Friday night thing to do. You go ice skating and hang out. But then there was this moment every night, every Friday night, where, like, the cool kids, four couples, would go outside... near like a golf course, near the ice skating rink, and then like about 9 to 12 yards away from each other, they would start making out. Now, it was out in the open enough to where the rest of the kids, like all of us who couldn't make out with people because we weren't cool enough, we would come and then we would stand about 14 to 17 feet away from them. And
like, it was almost
them.
Like a golf gallery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like watching this.
Watch them make it. Get in the hole. I don't know. We were just hanging out. And it was so, in retrospect, it was the
It's just
weirdest.
So voyeuristic.
Like, they had to know we were there. And we obviously were so close.
And what were we trying to just get close to greatness at that point, or we were hoping to learn something. I don't even know what we knew, but we were just like, people were going outside and we had to go outside with them, and then we were just all looking at these kids.
All right. So is this the last one?
Yeah.
The last story? Okay. This is back when I was single as well, and I had a party at my house and invited like 4 or 5 women among a bunch of people who I was kind of interested in, and I was like, which is the dumbest idea.
It's terrible.
It's so bad.
Terrible.
It's so stupid.
Awful.
Because you just can't get...
Like, you can't do a law of averages for that
thing. No, it's just dumb. 2 is dumb. 1 is what you should do. But so I can't spend any time with anyone throughout the night. It's also my house. I made a little mojito bar. I spelled mojito wrong above it.
It's awful. H? You put an H?
A fucking H in there. Why?
Who puts an H in mojito?
I defame Cuban culture. Yeah. Whatever I was doing
terrible.
Was bad. So it was a bad night, and so none of the girls that I was really interested in seemed to be interested in me. I couldn't give them any time. But there was one woman who was a wild card, and she kind of hung there for the whole night. And she was giving me a lot of the signs of like, okay, we're going to do something here. This is going to be on. And everyone kind of leaves, mm-hmm. and she's still there, and I'm hanging out with her. And we start making out. But it's the worst making out ever. It's so uncomfortable. She's not initiating anything further. I'm like, I can't push anything on her. I don't want to be rapey. So I just, I just want it to be nice. I want her to get into it, and then we can have fun. And she just doesn't. So I'm like, on her back, I'm doing this weird, like I'm petting like a wolf or a dog or something. I'm just like, it's this.
It's like
motion.
Staccato.
Yeah, it's like it's down her back or it's like a thing. This is great for a podcast. I'm making hand motions. So I'm petting, and it's so awful and not fun.
It's like you're comforting her, like for her loss or something.
Yeah, it's
so
weird. Like it's gonna be okay.
Yeah.
Everything will work out.
Which is not what you should be talking about when you're hooking up.
It was so bad, and so my arm actually got so tired from doing that, and since nothing was happening, I was like, should I walk you to your car now? It was so awful. And it was so disappointing. So I walked to her car, and I make sure she can get home, and she seemed okay. And she got home, and I called her, and I was like, did you make it home? Yes, okay. And so then she called me. I called her back, left a message. Then she called me back. Then I never called her back because I was like, that's
you've
too many
on.
Back and forth
right.
for what for this. All right? This, hand
this is not worth
that
a lot.
That doesn't equal a third call.
No, that's not.
So I just don't do it, and then a couple weeks later, I go out to play a pickup softball game with some friends. You know, we're just throwing the ball around, and I see coming down the right field line, to, I guess, watch the game, this girl, who I have not called back, and her shitty friend. Like, she was cast as the shitty friend. Yeah.
Perfect. You
shitty
got her.
Look on her face, just shitty clothes, like a fucking shitty purse. It was just bad. Like, purse. Who brings a purse to a softball game?
Stupid.
You do not need a purse at a softball game.
And if it was a good purse, it would have worked.
It
but
still would have worked,
purse.
But it was a shitty purse. All right, so... So she... They're walking down the line, and I'm just like, oh, great. And literally, I'm standing out by second base, and I'm throwing the ball to what I can only describe as an amazing lesbian softball player. All right? She's awesome. Like, has way more skills than anyone I've ever played ball with. She's so great. She's a little short, but she's great. And so we're throwing back and forth. We're getting a good throw on, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to throw the ball to this woman. I'm going to focus. Maybe if I just keep playing, this other person will not think that I'm there. I don't know what I was thinking. But so I start throwing the ball to her. We're getting a good throw. I'm backing up. We're doing long throws. It's feeling really good. My arms loosen up. This woman goes in the dugout, I guess. She's not going to play. She's hanging out with her shitty friend, shitty purse. And and I step into a throw. And as it's leaving my hand, I can feel that this is too high of a throw for the lesbian woman I'm throwing it. And the second the ball left my hand, it reminded, I literally did think of this. I'm not shitting, this isn't for a story, because this, that feeling of like dread the second you throw something like that, it happened one other time in my life.
We were playing baseball in the front yard, and this is what we would do for hours. Like, this was literally, we could spend 2-3 hours at one place just throwing a ball back and forth to each other, and when one of us would miss the ball, we would just completely berate each other. So we're throwing it back and forth, throwing it. Jay throws one way too low.
Like, feeling of dread.
Ridiculously between two hops. Feels a little dread. I, like, miss
it. He misses it.
Two bounces and right into the car parked in the neighbor's house right next to us, and puts a hole right in the front left front light of the thing.
So we, at that moment, do the only thing that we can do.
We grab the ball, go downstairs in the basement, and fucking hide.
Hide in the basement of our house.
Like, hiding like Jews from the Nazis. Yeah. And he was a German neighbor.
Our neighbors were German.
They were German.
It
was like playing that whole thing out. So there's like this weird sort of...
Hide in the attic. You get the fuck out of here. Don't look... And like they come out and inspect what could possibly
be going on. And like, our house is built on a hill, so like the basement has a window that we can kind of look out of, and we're just, it's a terrible window.
Dead flies on the windowsill. We're looking through the
dead flies to the thing, and the police show up. They write a whole police report.
Like,
our parents are like, what are you guys doing downstairs? We're not doing anything.
Filing records.
We're masturbating together. Just whatever it is, it's not connected to what happened out there.
It's nothing to do with the cops.
We have nothing to do
outside at the Zeckert's house.
There's nothing to deal with out there.
So the cops leave.
Come and they leave, and like, we are just, it was.
And we never said anything to them.
The next day, we packed up our stuff and went back to our senior year of college. So,
and then we went back and we did college. And we never told them. We never told them anything.
And I feel bad about it to this day.
I feel bad.
Like cowards.
We should send them a check.
We should really send them some reimbursement.
Maybe it's reparations for the war.
Yeah. Right,
so back to the thing.
So the toss
so
is in the
I
air.
Release the ball.
Thinking
of the Zeckerts, and the ball starts sailing in the air, and it goes over the lesbian's outstretched glove. And I don't even see, because I have to look away. I hear a smack. It's that, and it's loud, and it's intense.
It's like the sound of like a hard thing on bone, like a smack.
Yeah, I almost heard bone. And then I hear scream, and then I hear crying, and then I see everybody surround somebody. And in my mind, I'm like, please let it be the shitty friend. She's shitty. She thinks like this probably happened to her all the time.
This is why you get the shitty friend to shield you for stuff, you know?
Shield. So I go running over because I threw it, so I feel really bad. And I come over and I push through the like crowds of people like looking at
news reporters, everybody.
Yeah, I'm like pushing through people, and I get down, and it is her.
It's the girl that you hooked up with.
Not the shitty girl. The girl I hooked up with. And she is sobbing, and she has a huge mark from the softball. And she's crying. And I'm there to console her. And strangely, I start doing the same motion that I was doing when we weren't hooking up. And I mean, I mean, now there are like 20 people around to make sure she's okay. She's crying and she's like, and she's hyperventilating. And then
everybody's looking at you.
Everything. It's totally quiet. She looks up at me, okay, when she realized, because I don't think she knew that I had done it. She looks up at me and in front of like 20 other people, through sobs, she's like, "Why didn't you call me back?" I was like, I spelled mojito wrong, so I should be off the hook here.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin. Sodomi fellatio. Cunilingus klingt das hässlich. Warum findest du's dann grässlich? Masturbieren kann ein Kind, also los die Kama Sutram Orgie beginnt. Well, you might have guessed we'd play the German version of the song Sodomy from Hair on this episode. And behind me now is Mike Furman with a song that's a pretty apt intro to the story that I told in San Francisco called Vegetables with Benefits.
I'm gay.
I'm 18 years old. And I'm taking the D train deep, deep, deep into Brooklyn. It's about 3:30 in the morning, and I have so much Guinness and Jägermeister in me that I'm just blithering. And I'm talking to myself, and I'm saying, Kevin, why are you so self-conscious? If you would just like not take things so personally, you could like get closer to people. And the people I had in mind were the other members of the state who I had just gotten. I was just getting acquainted with everyone. We'd started the comedy group at NYU. And the thing about the state was it was an amazing group of people, and I was incredibly psyched all the time to be a part of this group of people. But we had a way of communicating with each other. You know, a lot of comedians do this where it's a kind of humor, roasting kind of humor, where you kind of jab one another in little ways to, like, keep everyone's ego from getting too big. But that was a little problematic for me because my ego has always been way too small. So people would make little jokes at my expense, and I would be nursing a wound for days, which was just stupid. I believe the joke that had been made on this particular evening was I was their tech guy. I was the guy who was like playing the music cues while they were rehearsing, and I fucked up a cue. And someone in the group said, Kevin, you don't know this cue by now? And then the whole group just stopped what they were doing and kind of lined up in front of me and started singing, if you don't know it by now, you will never, ever, ever know it. Ooh. So I am nursing a wound over the most retarded joke ever. Like, there's no reason to be upset about this, but here I am, I'm feeling self-conscious, all that sort of thing. And I think that my sensitivity did me a real disservice. It made me a little bit disconnected from the other members of the group. And there were two other ways I felt kind of disconnected. One, I lived way out in Brooklyn because I was dirt poor. Everyone else lived in the dorms at NYU. So when we all hung out, we were all just, you know, partying there in the village, and then they'd just drop off to bed. And I had this journey deep into the night into Brooklyn to do. But the other way I was a little disconnected was that I was the only gay one. And so everyone we were socializing with, you know, they'd hook up with members of the opposite gender during that time and then just drop off to bed with them in their dorms. And I'd end up going home feeling lonely and frustrated and horny. And that's how I was feeling this particular night on the train. So horny that, you know, like my knee is bouncing there on the train floor. And
I get an idea this particular night. I'm like, I know how I can solve my horniness problem this time around and get my mind off of all this stuff. It was something I had never tried before. I thought, when I get home tonight, I'm going to shove a cucumber up my ass. And the thing about me and new ideas is that when I think of something I've never done before, I'll often leap right to magical thinking. Like, yes, this could be the thing that solves everything. Like, you know, because sometimes you do hear people say, oh, this one sexual thing I learned just kind of like, bloop, like fixed all my, you know, problems inside. And then I do remember a friend of mine back then saying, oh, Kevin, that anal stimulation sort of orgasm, that is going to be taking things to a whole nother level for you. You'll be singing a whole new tune with like more bass and more treble, more wah-wah on the guitar. So now I'm convinced. I'm like, yes, this will solve everything. I'm very excited. I can't sit down anymore. I'm starting to get an erection just thinking about it. The train comes to my stop and I think, wait a minute. There is no way I would ever have anything like a cucumber at home. I have the diet of, like, you know, an 8-year-old's birthday party. So then I think, well, why? I was pretty new to New York, so I thought, it's a city that never sleeps, right? There's got to be, like, a 24-hour place open. And I run downstairs, and I see that, no, I am in, like, the most conservative neighborhood. I'm, like, in this Hasidic Jewish neighborhood that's, like, everyone's asleep. But miracle of miracles, I do, for the first time ever, notice that right across the street from the subway is this big red sign that says, Waldbaum's, open 24 hours. And it wasn't just a deli, it was like the giant family supermarket, the grocery store. So I run right in. And the place is like a David Lynch sort of thing. It's like, you know, like flickering fluorescent lights. There's no music playing, it's totally silent. And there's just this one dude behind the register, a cashier. He's like half asleep, and he's like maybe a skater dude if he ever gets up the energy to do that sort of thing. Maybe he's stoned. He kind of looks like a much dumber Kurt Cobain. And he's too, you know, I'm rushing in all excited, and nothing's going to break his boredom. He just watches me go by. And I get to produce, and they have a wonderful selection of cucumbers. So I'm like Goldilocks, you know, I'm like, well, I'm not too big and not too small. And finally, I find the magic one, just the right one, and I start to run back to the cashier, and I think, wait a minute, might it look just a little bit odd? I rushed it here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm only getting one cucumber. So I said, I'll just get something that people would ordinarily mix with cucumbers, like peppers, that sort of thing, lettuce. But I was just so poor, I had spent all my money on the Guinness and the Jägermeister. I had change in my pocket. It was going to be one cucumber or nothing at all. So I was like, all right, just put on your most, like, casual, innocent sort of face, walk up to him, and I place my purchase down. And he just kind of looks down at it, kind of expressionless. He looks back at me, expressionless. And then he just, you know, does it on the cashier thing there, and he takes my change, and he puts it in a bag, and I think, oh, well, this dude is so stupid. He doesn't suspect a thing. I'm getting away with this. And he's handing it to me, and that's the point at which he raises an eyebrow. And he says, enjoy your salad. So now I'm trying to remain expressionless, and I hightail it out of there. And I just knew that as I'm going out, that we're both laughing about this. And I am happy to tell you that later that night, the cucumber was spectacular. It did a great job. Now, I'm not sure it actually did fix any of my psychological problems, but I think that that cashier actually, you know, is something that I ended up remembering in a good way, because the next day I'm thinking, you know what, I was so, like, freaked out about self-consciousness and shyness and people laughing at my expense last night. But with that cashier, it was a perfect example that, you know, sometimes you can just laugh at yourself. So, nowadays, I still find myself every now and then in a situation where someone's made fun of me, and I say to myself, Kevin, just relax. Have a nice salad. Thank you.
This is Risk. We're listening to a mashup by Dinbot of Black Sabbath and Electric Six. I'm very excited about our next guest. Mr. Rich Fulcher is an American, but he's a legend in Britain for the roles that he's played in The Mighty Boosh and Snuffbox. He's got a great book out now called Tiny Acts of Rebellion. Just one of the one-of-a-kind comedians out there today. We call this story Fulcher. I hardly even know her.
Now tell me, do you have any money? I want to spend all your money at the game bar.
I was telling my comedy friend Steve Agee about what I was going to do tonight. I said, I'm going to do Risk. And he said, what are you going to talk about? And I said, strange sex stories. And he said, I will give you any amount of money if you go, hi, I don't know how to verbalize strange sex, so let me act it out for you. Mussolini. Oh, God damn you. God damn. And do this for 20 minutes. So tell him I did it if you see him. At the very least, he'll give me some marijuana. I'm in a bit. I wanted to say this outright. I'm going to tell two little stories, but I wanted to say at the outset, I'm sorry I can't be a little bit more graphic. My girlfriend is here, and I didn't want to get too detailed about some past experience or something where you're in the cab or whatever going home, and she's like this, and there's this silence. It's like, I didn't know you were into wound fucking. I didn't even know you owned a gun. And, you know, you don't want to get into that sort of thing. Although something did happen recently. We're staying at this, like, long-term hotel place. And, for perverts and homeless people. And no, it's like one of those places you go in L.A. To have your dreams stomped on. And so you go there, and I called in because I jumped on the bed. My girlfriend was on the bed. I jumped on the bed. Who knows what would have happened, but it broke. So I called down to reception, and I said, this is what I should have said. Let me tell you what I should have said, and then I'll tell you what I said. I should have said, the bed broke. Could someone come up and fix it, please? That's all I need. Instead, I go, hi, I don't know what happened, and yeah, my girlfriend and I were on the bed, and too much information, and yeah, we weren't doing anything, but we were about to do something, and then I don't know what was going to happen, and the bed broke. It's just like, it's like I painted myself into a corner. It's almost like I could have called up and go, yeah, I was on the bed, and I don't know what happened, but I was with my girlfriend, and the bed broke, and it not that it was violent or anything, but if you're into violence, not like that's bad, but strangling is okay, but not like David Carradine strangling, but like normal stuff, that it just was. And then, do you like pickles? I'm going to tell two quick stories. One is about masturbation, and the other is about bestiality. And I'm sure a lot of us have these stories. You know, you try to do it, masturbate, as they say overseas, wank, in different places. And I, for a short period of my life, in just before I went to college, I worked at the Pentagon. And I would always have these, I would be, you know, you're young and you want to create moments in your life. And I was kind of OCD about it. I would like literally like click my teeth when I had, there was a moment, like it was almost like taking a Polaroid moment. I would go, like, you know, like one time I drove the car over 100 miles an hour and I went, you know, like I was going to take that picture in my mind for the rest of my life. So I'm working at the Pentagon, and I'm trying, you know, I'm a word processor. I don't really have high security clearance, but I'm doing things trying to keep my mind active. And, you know, like they say, you can get anywhere in one side of the Pentagon to the other in 5 minutes. And so I would try that, like, from the hardest place. And you could do it. You just got to go to the center and then, yeah, it's no big deal. It's a fucking Pentagon. That's all it is. So when, you know, and then, you know, this is a point where I'm doing, you know, I'm masturbating quite a bit. And so it's a combination of being like the invisible man. You know, after a while, if you're invisible, you're definitely going to get amoral, right? You're going to, as much as you say, oh, I'm just going to go into church and watch somebody breathe, you know, eventually you're going to go in the women's showers and stuff. So that's the way it was with me in the Pentagon. It was like, what can I do in the Pentagon? And so, how's that for a pitch session? What can I do in the Pentagon? I'm turning into a wolf man. No, and so basically, I went by the newsstand all the time, and eventually I bought a penthouse there. And I said to myself, this will be a moment. I'll beat off in the Pentagon. And so that's my story for that. Yeah, okay. Now, this other one involves, because you think something's weird, like, in your early life, like high school or college, but actually the weirdest people I ever met in one consolidated group were in law school. Like, all the people I lived with were just literally, like, out there. Like, I had a friend, Roger. I went to school, a law school, and it was in kind of rural Virginia. And there was this guy named Roger from Texas who spoke like Kermit the Frog. And he believed in pronouncing every consonant of every word. So he would say stuff like, may I have a receipt, please? And, I think I have pneumonia. So I lived with him, and sometimes when he'd get depressed, he'd be in the fetal position, rocking back and forth to the F.A.O. Schwartz song. Welcome to our world. Welcome to our world. So, yeah. And then there was this guy, Mike. He was my best friend. He was relatively normal. Levon, this guy who spoke in, you know, very little, and he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and this guy named Bo. Bo was a hard, hard working man. He would go in his room and work, and he would only come out to watch like Andy Griffith's show. No, it wasn't on at the time, you know, on prime time. It was like on reruns. He would do that, watch it for a half hour, then go back in his room and study. He was like, we called him the machine. And he never got along with Roger. Roger and he were like, I don't get you. And I'm paraphrasing that because there was a big problem one time when there was Lonesome Dove was on at the time, and Andy Griffith's show, and there was like a big debate about what to watch, and then Bo got his way because it was his TV. So Bo talked like this. Yeah, bud, whatever, man. He was kind of like kind of cool, but he would talk very little. He would say, I don't know the answer to that question. But then he would walk into his room. And so he'd just be very dramatic in his own, you know, way. And he said, Roger, you don't need to watch Lonesome Dove. Let's watch Andy Griffith. So one day we just, you know, a lot of the time we're just goofing around, and Bo's studying in his room, closed room, and we were just happened to be talking about, you know, like weird things like, you know, fucking sheep. And like, does anybody really do that? Like, because you always hear stuff. And all of a sudden, just randomly, Bo was like in the kitchen. He walks over to us, and like in all seriousness, he goes, let me tell you about fucking sheep. What? Because we had been talking before. It's like, it's too hard. You got to chase them. What do? Like, it's terrible. There's no way to get a sheep. This is when he came over and he goes, let me tell you what you need to do. You get these large waders, you know, on your feet, you know, that you can stick the hind legs of the sheep into, and then you push the sheep towards the water so they automatically start to back into you. You undo your trousers, and then you fuck the sheep. This, of course, was a friend of mine. He walks into his room. And there was nothing I could do to that but click my teeth. So I did that, and that's my sheep fucking story. And thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay. Well, first, I want you to suck my fingers.
No. Sorry.
No.
No. First kiss.
Oh, my bad.
Then suck my fingers. Then suck my dick. That's okay. Wait. Will you take it right off the top again?
First I want to kiss you.
Then I want you to suck my fingers. Then I want you to suck my dick.
Okay, so I'll do it. Okay. My fingers in my... Oh, okay.
In 3, 2, 1, and...
We'll be right back. machine.
Well, needless to say, that is Happy Elf, preceded by Animals Within Animals. Now, earlier I told you that we have been having one hell of a time putting this particular episode together because of unforeseen technical difficulties. Kumail Nanjiani told a brilliant, spectacular story that was supposed to go here right now. That file is gone. However, it's a testament to the strength of the Risk endeavor in general that we're still going to end on a bang. Because the previous night, at the Drugs and Alcohol show, Joshua Grinnell told a spectacular story of his own that just happened to hit on a little bit of the strange sex as well. In the drag world, he is known as Ms. Peaches Christ, and here he is at Risk at San Francisco Sketch Fest. We call this one, Who's Blowing Who?
Okay, so I'm Joshua, but most people know me as Peaches Christ. And thank you. See? Peaches is sort of, I feel like I'm constantly living in the shadow of Peaches. And even doing this is a little strange, and telling a personal story is very strange for me. So I'm going to do my best. I kind of describe Peaches Christ in the third person, because I think of her as a character, and we design her hair and her costumes, and she's kind of like someone else. And so I feel like I have sort of a superhero celebrity. Like, I'm really not famous. She's famous. And one time at the gym, a woman wearing a Peaches shirt was really rude to me, you know? It was like, you bitch. It's fucking me. But, so I accept that, you know. It's not a real fame. It's kind of a faux fame. So as far as drugs and alcohol go, when thinking about me and Peaches and drugs and alcohol, I have a lot of alcohol in my story. I love alcohol. I love it. I love to drink. When I first moved to San Francisco, I became part of a nightclub group of performers here called Tranny Shack. Yes. So the logo, quickly after we formed Tranny Shack, became I Blacked Out at Tranny Shack. And we sold bumper stickers and t-shirts, and everyone blacked out at Tranny Shack. And I was told as a young queen, you know, a drag queen without alcohol is like a car with no gas, you know. So I knew I had carte blanche freedom to drink as much as I wanted. Shortly after Tranny Shack kind of got started, this idea to take the show on the road was born, and Tranny Shack Reno became a reality, where 100-plus queens in full drag would get on a bus, and we'd go to Reno, Nevada, for no reason, really. And we'd do it, like, being in drag in San Francisco wasn't enough, so we get on this bus, we'd go to Reno, and if debauchery at Tranny Shack here was, you know, at a level 10, it was like at a level 10,000, you know. Often, before we'd even cross the Bay Bridge, someone would puke. You know, that's, and this is 7 in the morning. We'd start super early. And we'd go to Reno, and we'd gamble, and we'd have fun, and no one would sleep, and it was wild and crazy. And after a few years, a documentary film crew decided to come up from LA, and they wanted to follow around myself and my sidekick, Martini, and film us at this Tranny Shack Reno. We have Martini fans in the audience. She actually tried to come tonight but couldn't get in. That's tragic. So anyway, she and I got into drag at like 5 in the morning. They filmed us getting into drag. They filmed us on the bus trip. I thought, we've got to be extra crazy. We got to make this documentary good. Well, the film was never made because we were so fucked up in such a mess that the filmmakers did us a favor and never made the movie. They showed me footage. I didn't remember anything. It was like watching your life, but you didn't remember being there for it. They couldn't get into the casinos. You're not allowed to film in the casinos. So I saw footage of me being thrown out of a casino. I had thrown an eyelash at a blackjack dealer. Don't remember. I was locked out of my motel room. Martini, you can see there's a gorgeous shot of Martini on a bed in a motel, passed out with the window open, and me in boxers and a t-shirt with full peaches makeup banging on the window. Wake up! Wake up! It was freezing. And horrible. So that, plus a lot of other things, led me to quit drinking in the spring of 2002. So I haven't actually had a drink in like 9 years or something, which is amazing for me. Thank you. I feel like I'm at a meeting. Anyway, I stopped drinking, and after a few years, I was invited to be the din mother on the Tranny Shack Reno trip. There always needs to be someone who's ultimately responsible for this mess. At this point, the trip had grown to be so big that it was two huge Greyhound buses that I was managing. So 200 queens I was taking to Reno, stopping in Auburn. Have you ever been to Auburn? And like going to McDonald's, and it was like drag terrorism, like the whole restaurant with like people grabbing their children and running out, and I was responsible for all of this mess. And on this one trip, the SF Weekly decided to come and document it for a cover story. And so on the trip, in Peach's character, I announced that I was going to relapse in Reno, which of course everyone on the bus cheered for and they loved. I started talking about how I was going to do it, what I was going to drink. Now, this is all shtick. It's all character. It's all improv, you know? Well, I never said to the journalist, like, you might not want to print that, or you might want to have a caveat. Because at this point, I had tons of sober friends in the city. I was doing a lot for sober folks. I was really into it. So the story came out. I didn't even read it, because I lived it. I didn't need to read the SF Weekly story about Tranny Shack Reno. But I would walk by friends of mine in the street, and they'd scowl at me. And I'd sort of look at them like, why are you giving me attitude? And I didn't know. They'd keep walking. Well, I found out that this article, you know, basically said that I'd completely relapsed in Reno, but I hadn't. And so this sort of idea of this sort of faux person that you live in the shadow of kind of haunts me. You know, even while I was making the movie, it was like, is it Peaches directing us or is it Joshua directing us? And I think Tranny Shack Reno, the reason the story for me of living a double life is especially interesting has to do with this next little anecdote. And if my mother is listening to this, turn off the radio or whatever. She's like, Mrs. Christ is the biggest Peaches fan there is. And she will find this on YouTube or something. So turn it off. So I went out as Joshua anonymously and hooked up with this guy. And brought him back to my apartment, and we had amazing sex. Like, totally nasty, great, fabulous sex. Didn't know his name, really. Didn't care, you know? It was perfect. And, until he was getting up to leave. We even talked afterwards. We were like, I was thinking maybe I'd even go to coffee with this person. And he's leaving. He's dressed. He's getting his stuff together. And on his way out, he glances over. And on my refrigerator, he sees a poster of Peaches. And he looks at me and he says, oh my God, you're a fan of Peaches Christ? And in that moment, I have to make a decision. It's kind of crucial. And I say, yeah, I'm a fan of hers. And he goes, oh my God, I love Peaches. You know, my friend just went on the Tranny Shack Reno trip. And this is, you know, I'd been doing it sober now for at least a year. And he goes, and do you know what? She got loaded and blew him in the back of the bus. And I said, no, she didn't. No. And he said, yeah, she did. my friend was blown by Peaches Christ in the back of the fucking bus. And I'm like, no, you know, she's the den mother. She's in charge of the trip. That did not happen. And we're making our way to the door. Now I'm kind of getting upset and angry. Like, why would someone lie about this? What's going on? And he's kind of in the doorway and he's like, no, really, like, you know, and he's kind of getting mad at me. Like, are you calling me a liar? So I muster all the peaches I can. And I look at him and he's standing in the doorway and I say, I know that your friend did not get blown by Peaches Christ because you just got blown by Peaches Christ, motherfucker, and shut the door. And that's my story. Thanks.
Wraps up this one, folks. This is Go Home Productions you're hearing behind me now. Folks, today is the day. Risk it.
I think I'm capsized.